Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome to the show. Thanks for checking in with me today. Bill Arnold here with you. We've got a great hour coming up, but we just had a great hour. And if you missed any of it, you're going to want to go to the website, myfaithradio.com, and check it out. We had Dr. Timothy George just on. He was the dean of the Beeson Divinity School for 30 years, and that is one sharp mind. And we had a delightful conversation with Ray Comfort. You may know him from his books and movies and on-street preaching, because he's really good at that. And he, if you've seen any of his things on the internet, you're really drawn in quickly. And you watch because you can't stop. He's really good. So if you need some encouragement, you're going to want to check that out. And I would say that the word of the day was given to us by Dr. George. Rebecca, do you know how to even pronounce that word?
I do, because I took notes.
What
but
is it?
I had to look it up. Tetragrammaton.
Ah, I lost me.
Try to work that into a sentence today.
Say it again.
But tetragrammaton.
Do you have any idea what it means?
I do, because I looked it up, but only because I had to be sure it was a real word and he wasn't just trying to put one over on us. No, he's a very smart guy, and he introduced us to this word, and it means the four-letter name for God. Many times we translate that Jehovah or Yahweh. That's how we say it. Mm-hmm. But in Hebrew, it's actually only four consonants put together. And I believe tradition says it's kind of too holy to write out all at once, so they just used a shortened version of it. And those four letters that we say are Yahweh, for example, he says is a tetragrammaton.
So that's your final answer.
Can I phone a friend? Can we call Dr. George again?
Do you have any more to say, or should we move on?
Well, I think it's fascinating that not only, you know, it doesn't really matter what you call it, I suppose, but learning more about it is just, it draws you in. And I think that's what I got from our interview, which if you didn't catch it, catch the podcast. I highly recommend it. The more that you study and you know about God, the more you realize how much there is to know that we can't possibly know. And so you've got to keep unpacking and keep like digging deeper and diving in. And it's just, there's so much more. There's so much more.
I agree. All right. We've got a great hour coming up. Bruce House Connect. And you would think that it would be spelled the way it sounds, but I promise you it's nothing close to the way it sounds. But he is a judicial analyst at Focus on the Family, and he's going to talk to us about the nominees that are being previewed. And that decision is going to be made tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 o'clock Central. And he's going to encourage us how to think and how to pray for our officials during this time ahead. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and then bring on Bruce House Connect. Guess how he spells his last name. You'll never guess.
Your prayers matter and are heard by God. When you pray, lives can be changed. Each week, the Faith Radio prayer team joins together to pray for relationships to be strengthened, finances to be increased for God's glory, for our leaders to follow God's will, and for so much more. Will you join us? The Faith Radio prayer team, made up of hundreds of listeners, receives an email with each week's prayer focus. You can be a part of the Faith Radio prayer team by signing up at myfaithradio.com.
James 5:16 says, "The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." Do you need prayer today? You can submit your prayer request to PrayerWorks, and people will pray for you. Just visit myfaithradio.com and click on PrayerWorks. Submit your request and take comfort knowing you are being lifted up. You can also pray for other requests while you're there. Receive prayer support through PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com today.
Praise your name from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name, lift our voices and proclaim. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name.
Welcome back. back to the show, I have on our studio line Bruce Hauskonnect. He is a judicial analyst at Focus on the Family. And as we are today, like in the Super Bowl of waiting to hear who President Trump is going to pick for the Supreme Court nominee, we're going to start looking through the options and analyzing this with Bruce. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Well, thank you, Bill. Good to be on.
Thank you so much. Now, I've heard that if we throw a dart at the four options that have been talked about, they're all winners.
Yes, that is true. That is true. And and we all know about them because they've been on the list since at least 2017, if not even before President Trump was elected. There are a couple lists there, and these people were all on them that are being highlighted in the news every so often.
Now, isn't it safe to say that when he was running for president, he had submitted a list of potential nominees for the Supreme Court? So he's been pretty transparent about this list for a long time.
Very transparent, and that was probably brilliant political strategy, too, because in the polls afterwards, it seemed like almost one out of five Americans voted specifically because they were concerned about the issue of the federal courts.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good decision on his part to do so.
Now, Bruce, when Antonin Scalia was nominated, he was voted in 98-0. I don't anticipate this happening with this coming candidate. Do you?
No. Times have changed. I think it happened shortly after Scalia was appointed when Robert Bork was nominated to the court and he had his character assassinated, and the court became completely political after that point. And I think because the court has become political that there are no gimmies anymore and no consensus and certainly nothing less than sharp divided points of view in the Senate and across America for that point.
So, Bruce, as we are anticipating tonight's announcement, what should we be thinking and how should we be thinking about the choice that's coming, that's going to be announced tonight?
Well, the best choice for the court is always going to be someone who adheres to the Constitution's text and the original understanding of those valuable words as the framers meant them to be understood. We have gotten ourselves into a time in history where one party wants judges that interpret the Constitution the way the policy of the time would demand it in terms of what some people want politically. And there are others who say, no, let's look at the Constitution and the laws we're interpreting and go where that leads. That leaves personalities and personal likes and dislikes of the justices out of it. That's what I would call a good constitutionalist judge, and that's what we desperately need on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. We've got some now, but we do not have a majority of such justices, and perhaps after tonight we can look forward to that.
Let's look back maybe just 20 years. Have the judges done that in the past, or have they let their personal political preferences come into the lawmaking? Or not the lawmaking,
definitely,
the law deciding.
Definitely the latter. And I'm thinking of primarily the left-leaning justices, and I include Justice Kennedy in that, who they don't even pretend sometimes to address the Constitution's issues. He was famous for alluding to such things as the mysteries of life and one's conception of your own existence and things that have no, you know, recognition in the Constitution itself. And we would get policy decisions, essentially. Well, this law may not say that, but let's make sure it does, because that would be the right thing,
right?
Probably what Congress intended.
Yeah, that's crazy. So when I look at some of the things that have gone before the Supreme Court, depending on what issue it is, I can instantly go, okay, that's 4-4, and then there's going to be the swing vote, because I know exactly where they're going to fall on stuff. So I wonder, how does it work that way? If judges are applying the Constitution to any particular issue, shouldn't some be 8-1 or 7-2 or 9-0 all the time?
And you would probably be shocked to hear this, but they mostly are. Of the 50 or 60 cases that the court hears in any given year, 70 to 80% of them are 7 to 2 or 8 to 1 or 9-0 because they're on uninteresting things like antitrust law or procedural issues in the federal criminal system, things like that. But when they get around to hot button social and political issues, everything from health care to abortion to religious freedom, that's where you see these ideological divides occur on the court. And that's when we get those predictable 5-4 decisions. We're just always waiting for what Justice Kennedy was going to to decide, to see which side of the line it fell on. So that's what's happened.
Bruce, can you talk a little bit about the confirmation process and what that person who gets nominated will be up against?
Yes. The nomination goes immediately to the Judiciary Committee in the U.S. Senate. They're charged with vetting all of the interesting things about each nominee that the senators are interested in on that committee. They'll hold a hearing that'll go several days, and that nominee will be grilled on everything that's been they've written or said in public, their personal views, and if you've ever watched even 5 minutes of those in the past, you know how contentious they can get.
Mm-hmm.
They will ultimately recommend to the full Senate whether to confirm or reject. But they can't reject a nominee by themselves, just because that's the Senate's tradition on Supreme Court nominees. So there will be a vote in the Senate at some point where it will take 51 votes to confirm or reject whoever President Trump picks tonight.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Bruce Hausknecht. He is a judicial analyst at Focus on the Family. We will take a very short break and be back with Bruce in just a minute.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network. We've been broadcasting relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching for nearly 70 years, and we are still committed today to leading people to Christ and nurturing believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We are a listener-supported ministry. Your gifts make this ministry possible, so thank you for your generous donations. Together, we can spread the hope of Jesus to the world. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Bruce Hausknecht. He's a judicial analyst. What a cool title that is at Focus on the Family. We're talking about the big news that's coming out tonight, the nomination of the next Supreme Court justice. And we're all waiting with great anticipation. I'm just trying to figure out the math on who's going to get what votes if all the Republicans vote in favor. There's a good chance that this will pass.
That is correct, and as happened with the Gorsuch nomination, there are a handful of Democratic senators from heavily red states whose existence in the Senate is owed to conservative voters on such issues as judges. So Senator Donnelly from Indiana and Senator Heitkamp from North Dakota and mm-hmm. Senator Manchin from West Virginia are three Democrats that come to mind who vote conservatively on judges because that's what their constituency is filled with.
So I'm getting the idea that Mitch McConnell can get this thing pushed through pretty quickly because we're going to need another Supreme Court judge by October.
That's correct. And I don't know that they'll make that first Monday in October deadline for when the next term starts, but they should be close.
Yeah.
Either end of October or end of November, by the latest, I would guess.
Bruce, they can't grill a person on their religious beliefs, can they?
Well, the Constitution says no, there is no – Article 6 says there shall be no religious test for public office in the federal system. However, one of the current nominees, Judge Barrett from the Seventh Circuit, when she was in her confirmation hearings last year, you may recall that Senator Feinstein questioned her very closely on her Catholic faith, and even made a statement that the dogma lives loudly within her, which was a very strange way of saying, I think she's too religious for this job.
Mm-hmm.
I fear that she's going to make her decisions based on her faith, which, of course, Judge Barrett would deny, as Justice Scalia has always done, and every Catholic justice before who's been grilled like that. So it can happen and has happened.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, it seems like there's a lot of weight being placed on this particular nomination. Is this any indication or sign that the Supreme Court has more power than they've had in the past? What are your thoughts on this?
Yes. Unfortunately, the answer to your question is yes. And it's because of that political importance that the court turned into back in the 80s when it got turned into a court that was weighted toward political issues like abortion. The irony is that the more conservative justices that we appoint, people who will look to the text and original understanding of the Constitution, the less important the court will become, because the more important the people will become through their elected representatives. They will a conservative judge, conservative court, will simply say, you guys make the laws, we'll apply it, but we won't reinterpret in terms of rewriting what you've written. But that's been the problem with the courts for the last couple decades, and that's why the court has become the most powerful branch of government in D.C., unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, should one person be able to make this kind of difference in the whole system? I mean, it was Kennedy that made the decision, basically, was the on gay marriage, wasn't it?
Yes.
The deciding vote.
He was the fifth vote.
Yeah.
And he's been the fifth vote on such things as abortion and Casey versus Planned Parenthood back in the 90s. He's been on, I think, three or four other gay rights or type cases since then. Lawrence v. Texas, he was the fifth vote. Windsor versus United States. And finally, Obergefell, he was the fifth vote. So, yes, he has had an outsized role in social issues in America just because he is that swing voter.
Yeah, well, Bush 41 gave us David Souter. He didn't turn out to be too conservative. And Reagan gave us Anthony Kennedy, which we couldn't really trust either. So what do we know about these candidates? Do you feel confident that they will be conservative, or do you think it's still a wild card?
Well, times have radically changed in the conservative ranks since Souter, since Kennedy, since Sandra Day O'Connor. It used to be kind of a system where there wasn't much vetting done. And because of that, and because of the results we got with Justice Souter and his liberal voting record, the conservative wing of the Republican Party has really gotten sophisticated about vetting judges. And so these days, people are combing through hundreds and thousands of pages of written decisions, looking at their background, making recommendations, interviewing people. The process has become much more complex as a safety valve or as a safety feature of the vetting process so that we can reasonably be assured that we won't have anybody as radically liberal as Justice Souter was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there's reason for confidence.
Oh, good. Bruce, what issues are you watching for Focus in the near future?
Always, Focus is concerned about the family.
Sure.
Either parenting, parental rights, life issues, abortion, obviously. Marriage, will the Supreme Court have the new Supreme Court have an occasion to speak about the definition of marriage or revisit the Obergefell decision? We'll be watching that very closely to see what the true nature is of the Supreme Court at this point with a new justice, and see whether it's truly conservative or whether we the people still need to be vigilant about getting justices on the court who will interpret correctly.
Mm-hmm. And then what is the best way we can pray for the officials during this process? I mean, there's going to be so much coming up with the confirmation hearings and all that. What is the best way to pray for all this?
Yes, pray for the Judiciary Committee. Whoever the nominee is will have supporters on that committee as well as detractors on that committee. And so it's a lot like hand-to-hand combat some days. So pray for the senators who are overseeing that process. Pray especially for the nominee's own well-being and that of his or her family emotionally and physically. It will take a toll, and they'll be accused of all sorts of bad things. So pray for that. Pray for strength for them,
yeah,
so they can get through the process, and ultimately pray for that confirmation vote at the end of the process.
Do you have a personal favorite? And I'm not asking who it is. I'm just wondering if you've got one.
You know, I don't. I not only can I not even figure out who the consensus favorite is. I know even today we've whittled it down supposedly to Kavanaugh or Hardiman,
mm-hmm.
But frankly, they're both good, as were the other two that were in the top four, and the other two that made the top six. I really liked all of them, and saw advantages to each of them. So, no, I don't have any favorites, mm-hmm. and I think the country would be well served by any of those.
And Bruce, the strategy that the president might have by having this be a prime time announcement?
Well, certainly it does build up name recognition for the nominee. You get the prime time audience, and so everyone wakes up tomorrow knowing who that person is, and everybody will be talking about it tomorrow morning. It's good PR, it's good marketing, and it gets the nominee off on the right foot.
Yeah, and the president kind of knows how to do that stuff, doesn't he?
He does.
How to get front indeed. And center.
He does indeed.
Well, I'll be about inning three into my baseball game tonight, so I will flip over and see what happens.
It will be a very exciting time, no doubt.
Bruce, thanks so much for talking to me today, and I will look forward to hearing what happens tonight and be praying for our country in the future. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Faith Radio is a media outreach of University of Northwestern St. Paul. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and to nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We do that by providing relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching, along with interactive talk programming that helps you in your daily life and points us all back to Jesus. You can also find helpful articles and podcast links for many topics on our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
Is your kid really top 3 out of 10,000? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. I love sports, especially basketball. I played in high school and college, and I can't wait to teach my young son the game. How cool would it be if he grew up and played for Duke or then the Celtics? Well, the truth is, he probably won't. And you know what? Your child probably won't either, no matter the sport. The math says so. Only 3 out of 10,000 male high school basketball players make the NBA. It's 9 out of 10,000 for the NFL. And for female high school hoopsters, it's 1 out of 5,000 for the WNBA. So for all of us who don't have the next Steph Curry on our hands, let's set realistic goals for our children's involvement in youth sports. Have fun, stay fit, let's help them develop discipline and appreciate teamwork. And then make sure your kids have enough time for school, rest, and other activities, including church and volunteering, things that may not get them to the Boston Garden, but will help them grow into well-rounded adults and disciples of Jesus. For more on faith and culture, come to breakpoint.org. I'm John Stone Street.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Welcome back. It's 32 minutes after the hour. My guest is Patrick Albanese, my friend from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, how are you?
Friend and colleague, I'm well.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. Now,
and you?
I'm well, thank you. This has been about 4 weeks now since you got a rescue dog. How's it going? And is the dog afraid of the vacuum?
The dog is afraid of the vacuum. The dog, we try to make lemons out of lemonade. Is that how that goes?
I think so.
Well, however the saying goes.
Yeah.
You know,
I get the gist of it. I get the gist.
It's one of those things that those people that say all those things say.
Exactly.
Did I tell you I applied to be a member of the group They?
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get accepted?
Application is unbelievable. It's very lengthy. You have to know a lot of stuff. And Well, that way when people say to me, you know what they say, I can say, whoa, stop right there. I'm one of the guys who probably said it. So just keep that to yourself. Anyhow. First off, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I've never tried that. Evidently, it's extremely difficult. I have a new dog. I'm trying to teach him old tricks. That is also difficult. Stay. But the vacuum goes on, and he says, well, in retaliation for this annoyance, I'm going to find a place that you are currently not occupying, and I will make a small deposit for you, and it will be in a nice area of carpet. So the dog would poop in the house. So it's like, well, how do we deal with this? And so we did the old trying to make lemonade out of lemons. We just started vacuuming outside. We just started vacuuming the lawn, bringing the dog with us, and sure enough, it worked great. We had to empty the bag a lot.
Yeah.
We're going through a lot of vacuum. But I highly recommend that trick for people,
yeah,
by the way.
I like it.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Now, moving on, we're becoming so.
I think we burned that topic.
as we become more aware of our environment, which is a good thing, I just saw now in the news that Starbucks is going to have a new strawless lid, and it just made me think if they're going to spend all this energy creating this strawless lid, it's going to be more of that harder type plastic, which is going to probably be the same amount of plastic that they would put into a cheap straw.
Is there a specific reason that this – I know that there was a video that went around that said, you know, the straws are killing some form of baby seal or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Some dolphin or whale.
And I believe some of it's been debunked. It's hard to know what's true anymore. And I like straws. I'm a big fan of straws. I remember the old paper straws. This is getting rid of the plastic straw. I actually believe Starbucks, if it could happen, may lose even more customers. It's like, let me get this straight. Okay. I don't have to buy anything, but if I buy anything, I can't have a straw. So how am I supposed to consume this beverage? By the way, please use the restroom. I don't understand. It seems like a big old virtue signal. Yeah, and I think the solution will be whatever it is going to be something that clogs up the environment even more.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually Starbucks, you're just going to go in there, kind of cup your hands and say, please, not too hot this time. Splash it into your mouth. Because the cups, the whole – I mean, I believe in saving the environment as best we can. But you know, sometimes I think these moves are just look at us.
Yeah.
Hey, it's like, I don't know if you guys care.
Yeah. And I'm okay if you want to do it, Starbucks, but then they get on their bandwagon and they think everyone should do it. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, I think that if you're in the process of flushing your business down the tubes, you would like your competitors to do likewise. So, because you know, the last thing you want is one of the other places saying, look, not only do we sell delicious coffee here, you can have a straw. And can you imagine?
Yeah.
You know how –
That's the big drawing the big drawing card.
Yeah.
We offer straws.
You know how you're driving across the street. Let's say, what's your limit? What is your gas price per gallon limit for crossing the street to get cheaper gas? Rather than staying on the right-hand side, the gas station on the right-hand side, you're going – oh, $2.55 across the street. I got to make a left-hand turn, then make a second left-hand turn to get out of the gas station into this traffic. But it's 5 cents a gallon cheaper.
Worth it.
It's just not worth it.
All right.
I mean, like how much cheaper would it have to be before you know, something like it's amazing how the littlest thing can make you say, I'll make that effort. So now you got two coffee shops next to each other. Honestly, for me, and this is perhaps just how ridiculous I am, I might opt. I drink my coffee through a straw. Actually, I've been doing it for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. I drink with a hot coffee with a straw as much as I can. And a lot of that was for many years I worked in I worked as a bartender, and I didn't want to have to handle the drink. I could actually mix drinks for other people while drinking my coffee. And plus, I did a lot of cross-country driving. And as you have done, you know the only way to drink your coffee while cross-country driving, if you don't want it on your lap,
right,
is straw.
Right. Because when plus, it gets on your lap in the middle of a long drive, you're miserable.
True. You're wide awake.
Yeah, you are wide awake. All right. I think I have a clue why the U.S. Postal Service might be losing money when they don't pay attention to certain details. They recently came out with a stamp that mistakenly featured the image of a Statue of Liberty replica in Las Vegas instead of the original New York statue. And that's going to cost the U.S. Postal Service $3.5 million in a copyright infringement lawsuit.
Yeah, you're close to correct. It's not going to cost them a dime. It's going to cost us $3.5 million.
Yeah.
But it was the most ridiculous thing. First off, you go, who's in charge of Googling over there at the post office? You couldn't find an actual picture of the Statue of Liberty, so you took an artist's rendering. It's pretty darn close. At the same time, you go, oh, gosh, I can hardly tell the difference. He says that his Statue of Liberty is a little bit more svelte and a little bit more attractive. Okay. They're both kind of green to me, if that's your thing. But, you know, it's almost like you say, well, but you drew a picture of the Statue of Liberty. You changed it a little bit. I mean, isn't that like if one of us did a cover of a Milli Vanilli song, which was already lip-synced, and then being charged a copyright infringement on a song that you were doing a cover of, saying it's too close. You're too good.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah, it's the little decisions that add up to, however that saying goes, a billion here, a billion there.
Right. All right. Now,
congratulations to the artist, by the way.
Staying on the Statue of Liberty theme, the woman that climbed the Statue of Liberty was charged with trespassing, interfering with agency functions, and disorderly conduct. And last Thursday in court, she pleaded not guilty. We took you off the Statue of Liberty. We've got video footage. There you are. How are you not guilty?
You made it to the big toe. Congratulations. That's one heck of a climb. Do you have altitude sickness? And she ruined a lot of people's vacations, and she's upset. And I listened to her rant, and she says, you know, it's again about our immigration system. And it turns out she's from the Congo. And she escaped from the Congo, where they're currently having a cannibalism problem from warring factions that are making people eat their dead in order to have food.
Oh.
So I don't know. I call me wacky. I'm not entirely certain. I want to listen to advice on how to run a country from somebody who came from that. But that's me.
Yeah.
I guess we're supposed to listen to everybody. And she didn't get very far. And I'm, for the life of me, I'm thinking, well, she had no rope. She had nothing. She made it to the toe.
Mm-hmm.
But they've just said, nah, leave her there. Just, you know, everybody go on your tour. Go to the top of it, because I recommend the elevator. It's a lot faster to get to the top than trying to climb up the outside. They shut everything down to get her off. And I thought, well, what was going to happen? She wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Just, okay, camp out by the big toe.
Yeah. We cannot try to figure out human behavior, that's for sure. There was a woman in Kentucky that was accused of selling meth in the courtroom waiting for the judge to appear.
Well, she knew where her best customers were going to be. I mean, all she had to do was walk up to somebody and go, what are you here for? He's like, meth. She's like, really? Would you like some?
I mean, you read this stuff and you go, you got to be kidding. Just, you know, the whole world makes, like, no sense most of the time.
Most of the time. And we're just the guys to decipher that.
I agree. Now, here's another video we found amusing. The students on a campus were being interviewed about what they thought about the pick for the Supreme Court. as if it already happened. And they,
as if it,
with full confidence, gave this guy their opinion. They were outraged by the pick.
The
pick hasn't happened yet, by the way.
The pick hasn't happened yet. Not only that, even the guy in the video, he's very careful not to – he doesn't give out any name. He doesn't say that, you know, oh, did you hear that Trump picked, you know, so-and-so. He just says – he just walks up and says, how do you feel about the new Supreme Court pick that Trump chose? And they go, oh, it's horrible. That's it. We're going back to the days of slavery. This person is the worst. They can't even – they're very carefully dancing around because – They don't know if it's a man or a woman, so nobody's being, you know, gender specific about anything, and they're just saying, oh, the worst. Oh my gosh, it's over. It's over for the country, and I think that it's Hitler. I mean, it reminds me, there was always, you probably knew these guys, you know, back when we were in high school, there was always maybe one or two of those guys that knew everything. And so it didn't matter what you said. They're like, oh yeah, they had the answer. They were up on it. And you, as you got older, you realized that guy was kind of full of beans. He really was full of beans. He didn't know anything. He just made it up. But I didn't realize that it's just about every kid on campus now walks around saying, yeah, oh, I know how everything is. And oh, that pick, I think the thing that's amazing is we've lost this ability to say, I don't know. I don't have enough information.
Yeah.
I was stunned at the number of kids that just couldn't say, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know he did pick somebody. Who did he pick? They couldn't even ask. They had to weigh in first.
Yeah. And I bet every one of them had a great self-esteem, and I bet they also have a bunch of participation trophies.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they went home. They called their friends. They got on Facebook and said, "I showed him what's for one of those grandmaisms, you know." I showed him what's for.
You know,
Grandma would say those things. You say, "I'm not entirely certain what that means, but okay, Grandma."
Yeah. Well, Patrick, let me take a break, and then during the break, we'll try to figure out what we'll talk about next. I'm talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Oh, what a nice afternoon. So glad you're with me today. Bill Arnold here. I have on our studio line Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, the cave rescue.
I have to intervene for one second.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Bennett, right? Tony Bennett.
That was Tony Bennett, yes.
Yes. Now, do you remember we crossed paths in Dublin, Ireland in, I don't know, 2003, something like that? And we're sitting in a sidewalk cafe. We're having a cup of coffee. And you go, hang on a second. I got to go. Tony Bennett just walked down the street.
Yeah, I was stunned.
You abandoned me at this restaurant. I go, what? And you run down the street and you come back. You're going, yeah, I just talked to Tony Bennett. I go, you didn't bring me.
I wanted him all to myself. He was walking all alone. I'm going, he's got no handlers. There's no security, nothing. And I raced out. I just dumped you like a bad habit. And I raced out and said, hey, Mr. Bennett, I just would love to shake your hand and just want to say hi and introduce myself. And then all of a sudden, security showed up. But it was fun because, you know, what a legend. He's 91 and he's still outperforming pretty regularly. You got to hand it to him.
Still sounds good. I know. And I'd like to make it half that distance.
Yeah. And they do.
Oh, wait.
I'd like to say I hope I looked that good at 91, but I don't look that good now.
Well, there's always room for improvement.
Yeah. But they say that he does sort of have a little bit of a slightly older gentleman feel, but when he goes on stage, he just completely lights up and changes, which I think is great.
Victor Borge was like that.
Yeah.
Or do you say Borgia?
I say Victor Borge. I say Borge.
Okay, so supposedly he'd be like this decrepit old man, and then once he sat at the piano bench, this life would just infuse in him from this artistic – I don't even know where it came from. I'm hoping that someday that thing possesses me. You know, that's why I'm learning the rope tricks, hoping that
Too much. Now, let's talk about the cave rescue. I think they've got eight boys out of 12 out of the cave, but they're checked into the hospital, and they're trying to figure out what kind of long-term problems they might have or diseases. And I go, They were in a cave for 2 weeks. Come on.
How bad can it be? How'd they get in there?
I don't know. Did they take one wrong turn and then all of a sudden they're 2 miles deep into a cave?
Yeah, and let me say, I guess the wrestling coach is in there with them, and I'm thinking, I'm glad I never had you as a coach for anything.
Soccer coach, isn't it? Is it wrestling or soccer? I think it's soccer.
Is it soccer?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So if they were wrestling, the first thing they did when they got him out is weigh him and say, woo, you can wrestle in a lighter class. I don't know how they got in there. And, you know, it's funny because, when you ask a question about, like, how did this happen? And when the answer is, well, it's complicated. Often what that means is, no, it's not complicated. It's simple, but it's embarrassing. So I think one day we'll finally hear, you know, the story. I hope they get the other four out there because, to me, that's miraculous. There was a Navy SEAL that died in the early parts of the rescue. And you know, you heard about it, and then when you saw the first images, you thought, or the cartoon graphics where they said, well, here's what they got to do. Then they got to go through here, and they're going to be underwater for what was that? That was like one full hour underwater as they're navigating one of these tight channels. And I'm thinking, oh, that's all my worst nightmares.
Oh, me too.
You know, claustrophobia underwater. I mean, you throw in a shark and maybe a plane crash, and I'm gone.
They even talked about blindfolding the boys so they don't panic, because they would realize that they're in such darkness that they could absolutely panic. So if they were to blindfold them, that would prevent that.
Oh yeesh. Yeah,
that just makes
now
sense.
I have provisional. I only have the I have claustrophobia, but only in small tight spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
Everywhere else I'm fine. You know, that's the only, you know, just in the tight spaces. No, it just sounds horrific.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how. Did they go in another entrance? And, you know, it makes me think of that, of like that Romancing the Stone and the Indiana Jones and, you know, all those mummy movies. I'm going, hey, this really happens. You go in one way and you can't get back out. And you're stuck in there and you have to evidently decipher some sort of evil ancient curse and go through some super channel and hold your breath for 3 minutes and you're safe. It's amazing.
Yeah, but it is fantastic news. These boys are coming out, and there has been a prayer effort by the world to save these little boys and to give them the help they need. And boy, people have rallied from around the world in prayer and in support. And it really is. I hope they get the other four out and the coach real soon.
Yeah. Remember Baby Jessica in the well? Yeah. Oh gosh. 25, 30 years ago, baby, the little girl that fell in the well.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole world was watching. I guess she was interviewed recently, and people saying, tell us about the experience. She goes, I wish people would quit asking me about that. I was a baby. I really don't remember being in the well.
Oh, sure.
Remember much. You know, you want details. It's like, okay, I don't think she was 2 years old. It's like, that was back when the officers had the blue uniforms. And I specifically remember this one, Officer Harrison, when he came down there to get me. It was fantastic because he had that mustache, the Thomas Magnum one. It was very popular at the time. I don't know what kind of details they want from a two-year-old, but do you know that you've heard Prince Louis right now? New York Magazine just wrote up a story saying that Prince Louis is one of the most elusive members of the British royal family currently. And I thought to myself, evidently this is true, because I've never even heard of Prince Louis. That's amazingly elusive, because I've not ever heard of Prince Louis. So I look at Prince Louis. Well, he's 2 months old.
Yeah. And he's elusive. According to the press, he's elusive.
Yeah, he's like, oh, he's the press here. Get me out of here. Quick, change the diaper. Get me going.
All right, we got big primetime television tonight. What are your plans for 8 o'clock this evening, Central Standard Time?
So Buffy the Vampire Slayer is on. Fantastic. I'm going to try and stay up and watch it. I think, you know, Trump is going to make a show of it. He's a showman. I hear that he's bringing all four of the finalists to actually where he's going to make the announcement, and then they're going to put on the American Gladiator costumes, and they're going to have one of those big tussles. It's going to be fantastic. And whoever
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
No, I'm wondering. There's people you like. I think he can't go wrong, because the original list he submitted 2 years ago, every name on it was pretty much a winner. Although I like this Corbett, because she's a mother of seven kids, and I don't think there's any better judge than a mother of seven kids. I'm one of eight kids. My mom was the judge.
She was great, wasn't she?
Yeah, it was always fair.
Yeah.
I didn't like the decision sometimes, but it was always fair.
But looking back on her jurisprudence, you can see the brilliance in her decision-making, can't you?
Did you say jurisprudence?
I did. I did.
Oh, hang on. I got to look that up. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. You know, Trump kind of trolled the media on that. They started screaming. They said, oh, she's only got 7 months of experience. And he said, that's 7 months more than Elena Kagan had.
Right.
So Obama appointed somebody who had
none. She was a solicitor. Wasn't she a solicitor general? And she had no judge experience and was overwhelmingly voted in.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no soliciting allowed. So I don't even know how
I don't even get how that works.
And Sonia Sotomayor is a Catholic. So when they go for the anti-Catholic thing, you go, well, you just approved a Catholic. So are you really anti-Catholic, or how does that – what's that saying? The dogma runs deep with you, or dogma – I don't know. They're going to oppose anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And too bad.
Yeah. Do you think any of the red state Dems will vote for Trump's pick?
I think there's a couple, you know, this Joe Manchin, who's already been invited, I think, to the ceremony. You know, he's a possible flip. This Heidi Heitkamp is a possible flip. They're in very competitive races, and I think they're realizing that they might get a little bit more support from swing voters in their home states if they show that they can work with Trump. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe, but, you know, we'll see. It's, you know, it's going to boil down to that abortion litmus test yet again. And it'll be a fine day when that isn't the litmus test for a judge.
I agree. I'm thinking that, you know, the way Trump operates, he'll lead you one way, and then he'll usually show something else to surprise and stay one step ahead of the press. His two running favorites right now, do you think it's going to be one of those two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I know he likes to do the rope-a-dope.
He does. He loves that.
Yeah, yeah. He's extremely clever that way, where, you know, he's the laser pointer cat thing. It's like, look over here.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I'm seeing the reports now where people are saying we should just expand the court,
mm-hmm.
you know, and put 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 or 15. You know, pretty soon it's going to be – you know, well, that was a close decision, 135 to 134.
Yeah, I've heard that somebody say they want a judge for every state, or that would be interesting.
It's going to be what it's going to be, because then, you know, you'll load the court up with your judges, and then if you expand the court, then they'll load them up with theirs, and then you expand the court. I mean, we can play this game. It's I just want all I care about, and we talked about this last week. If you adhere to what the Constitution says and not what it doesn't say, I'm usually pretty happy. Don't find things that aren't there and just work with what's there. Don't ignore the things that are there. Then I'm a pretty happy guy.
Patrick, yeah. Thanks so much for doing the show. As always, I always look forward to having our conversations. It's always so entertaining. Appreciate you very much.
Well, you are like the brother I never had.
Exactly.
And I know what you're thinking. I have two brothers, but you've never punched me.
I've yet to punch you.
So there's the brother I had, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Have a great
soon.
Night. Yep. Thank you to Patrick Albanese for being such a great guest. And it's been a great show. If you missed any of it and you want to catch up, go to myfaithradio.com. You can check out the podcast and you can listen to an episode or to an interview that you might have missed, or you can pass it on to a friend that you think might enjoy it. So that wraps up the show for the night. Have a great night, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.